Good morning, everyone. Welcome back to the Dry Side Dispatch, brought to you by HSI Water. And we've got a little bit different show this morning, as our guest this morning was spent the week last week with the NASA on the Space for Ag NASA tour. And so our guest this morning is Tillery Sims.
Yeah, the creator of the podcast.
The creator of the podcast. The reason we're all here.
That's right.
But Tillery, with the Space for Ag tours came in. It's all the, you know, pretty high up people up in NASA that came in, and they came and looked at agriculture out here on the high plains. And they also, I know they were in Oklahoma and various other places as well.
Yeah.
But you know, they were basically, they came out here to look at stuff in real life, but they're also touting some of the new stuff, new technology that they've got, which if you're in agriculture, interested in agriculture, interested in weather, interested in, you know, existing period, they've got stuff for you.
Yes.
And
yes.
So start us off on this thing. Let's go down the road and see what they
talk. Okay. So NASA Acres is the ag, a strategic ag collaboration with farmers. And so NASA launched a satellite many years ago, recognized that they were catching all this plant data, and they said, this is surely good for agriculture. So they created a project called Harvest, NASA Harvest, and it was a global look at agriculture. And it was so successful, they said, okay, now let's do the same thing, but let's do a really deep dive and see what we can provide for U.S. agriculture. So the they did a grant. This was a grant program, and the person that won the grant was the co-director of Harvest. So she and her crew are out of the University of Maryland. So that's why there were a lot of people there from the University of Maryland. So that group are the NASA Acres group.
Okay.
So Karen St. Germain is the director of the Division of Earth Science. So she has a $21 billion budget. And what she does, everything that looks down on the earth, it looks down on the earth, it's under her responsibility. And so she came up with this this idea because she said several years ago, obviously what we can do for agriculture is more than we ever anticipated, but I know nothing about it. And so I need to go learn. And so they're really listening tours is what they're called. And so they've done, ours was, this one in Texas was the fourth, I think. So, but this was the first time that they've ever had one that was very strategically planned. So I knew that they had done these. And so when we went, the first time that we collaborated with them was at Commodity Classic, not this year, but last year. And that's where I met Karen and just said, please, please, please come to Texas. Please come to Texas. We'll get it all done. We'll make it. It'll be great. You can't imagine how wonderful it'd be. And it's all this cotton and everything. And so she agreed. And then we, of course, missed because we had the shutdown.
Yep.
It was going to be in October of last year, which would have been much better time because we actually had cotton. They could have seen so much, and it wouldn't have been 105 degrees.
Yeah. Before the drought hit. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, it was, I would say, wildly successful anyway, regardless. So she brought her, a couple other folks with her, the guy that is the head of the Goddard Space Center was there. And Tom, he's such a nice guy. I mean, all these people are just like so normal. They're just people that you would just see at Walmart. You know?
The Goddard Space Center, is that in New Mexico?
Goddard is in Maryland.
In Maryland, okay.
There's a high school, Goddard High School in Roswell. Yeah, I don't know if he was from there or if it's because of White Sands where they launched missiles.
Oh, I don't know.
Well, I don't know why.
That's why I was asking.
Yeah. Well, this when Connor Watts and I were up there last month in July, we got to tour Goddard and we got to see where the shuttle that they just launched this last week or week before was like Sunday after the tour. The Roman. It's called Roman. It has a new name. It's named after a really brilliant woman scientist at NASA. It was the first in leadership there.
It wasn't the shuttle. It was a rocket, right?
It's a satellite.
Cause they, okay, the satellite.
Yeah,
launched.
Sorry.
Okay.
So, anyway, they, I got to see where that was built.
Hmm.
So they have this big
clean room,
three-story clean room.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then it has like this, I don't even know it. It looks like a massive silver cauldron with a lid. I don't know how else to describe it, yeah. But they put it down in there. It's the size of a bus. So they put these satellites down in that thing, and they screw it closed, and then they simulate all of the environment of space to see how they're going to handle up to everything. So it's really amazing. That was crazy. So we learned a lot during that time just about like what the satellites, different satellites do and how many we have, and there's a lot.
Yeah.
Of stuff
yeah. Well, I keep thinking
space.
The more we keep launching, like, when are they going to start hitting each other?
So
like,
no, I mean, they literally have. I mean, that's they identify. Like, I think they said, oh man, I can't remember if it's 59 new like obstacles in space every week. And so they're
including
like,
that includes satellites or just talking about debris?
That includes satellites, mostly satellites.
Well, didn't one SpaceX thing launch like 100
a
time?
I think the SpaceX are in low Earth orbit.
So they all have their own orbit. So yeah. mostly they won't collide. But
because,
there's literally someone there that is like getting notifications about collisions. I mean, they're constantly like Frogger.
Yeah.
It's crazy. So we got to see all of like everywhere where
that's
they're
the
set
most
up for each
game
one
of
those.
That's the most expensive game of Frogger ever.
It's crazy. There's a lot of trash up there.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of old decommissioned things, and
yeah.
I mean, and it's because it's everybody in the world. It's
all
the countries.
They can
that are
anybody can launch a rocket now.
Yes.
Rockets launching them.
Yes, exactly. So I mean, but everything is also based off of like calibrated, and everything is based off of NASA. So. Everything except for China.
They don't want anybody, but they know where they are. But
China knows, and China knows. I mean, their satellite. I would say that like their ag satellite is definitely can surpass ours at this point. And and if we cut our budget with theirs, which they're wanting to do by over half, then they'll be kicking our asses. And pardon me, I forgot we're on the radio. Donkey. I meant that as a donkey.
Yeah.
They'll be kicking our rears by, you know what I mean? Because the stuff that they can see, you know, just to be able to say we can see soil moisture levels.
Well, you know, that's the thing about it is that when you look at, you know, look at that, like the, over the last couple of weeks, all of the crop forecasts are coming out and you're starting to see movement in the grain market. Corn is up and they're expecting it to keep going up. Cotton's. From the time that we first talked to Todd Bauman, cotton's up about 20-something cents.
Isn't it? Was it 90?
It was 90-something cents earlier this week. When
No,
well, cause
there's no cotton here.
They finally came down and looked at the West Texas crop and saw that there was basically
nothing.
It might
here.
Be half a million bales instead of 3 million.
Yeah,
like,
I've seen, I mean, yeah, it's. Yeah. I'm not even sure it'll be that high. I talked to a guy this week that had gone out and done bowl counts. And it did how you're supposed to do it.
Yeah.
13 foot bowls, and it came out to 7 pounds.
Yeah, I figure a bunch of it. I think who was it? I was talking to a grower. Like maybe you can't. They can't start adjusting it until like September 30th or something like that. There's some date they can't start adjusting it.
Yeah.
Or it has to be so many days after planting. I don't know. There was some reason.
Yeah.
I went to Midland a couple of weeks ago and saw one field being plowed up, and that's the first one I've seen. But I expect to see a whole lot more of that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But anyway, but I was going on that though with all the stuff that NASA acres can't what they can already do with it.
Right.
You know, it's interesting that we don't know what somebody somewhere in the government has to know. But the fact that does not trickle down to the USDA and have an actual solid number of, hey, you know what? China's crop is X. You know, the water in Brazil is
Y.
Well,
and I'll tell you why. Here's why China is more, I think that they can gather better data than we can. And it is because everything that they see from remote sensing, they have to confirm that they are seeing what they're seeing. So, which means that
it's calibrated really well then.
Yeah, so it has to be ground truthed.
Right.
Right? Okay, so if you're in China, like you don't go ask for data.
Like, yeah, you just go get it.
You just go get it. It belongs to the government, right? Yeah. So, but if they're saying, I think that we're seeing protein, this certain protein in corn, well, in order for them to actually know for sure that they were, they had to work with the corn growers. And corn growers had to, like, say, here's the protein count on this field and this field and this field.
Yeah.
You know, and so they have to have that. And so until they have that amount of collaboration, we won't ever have that kind of.
I mean, I think that you could get on a, depending on how broadly you wanted that data, you could it could be done. But the reason China knows what our crop is like before they come, before the USDA says anything. You know, they don't, because, you know, the one thing that China, there's two things that they do. They, you know, do things cheap, and they do whatever the heck they want. And so, you know, while we have, you know, we'll be bound by treaties and, you know, agreements and stuff like that.
The Bill of Rights.
The Bill of, yeah, things like the Bill of Rights, you know, yeah, things like that.
Yeah.
You know, they don't like it. They don't like it. They just throw you in jail, just ask the Uyghurs. But, I mean, you know, when you go into that and you have the ability, when you have the ability to do something, which we have the ability to do a lot of things that we don't do.
Yes.
Well, on an elementary scale, it would be like, you know, they have all these estimated precipitation maps that they put out, and so you may see the app and it says, oh, you got 1 inch of rain, and then you go look at your rain gauge and you got a tenth.
Yeah,
like that's the kind of calibration on a very rudimentary scale that they're trying to do with saying, like, okay, we're looking at infrared, this colored, you know, wave is like this, we think, and so we're gonna, and then they go check it and say, okay, well, that correlates to 10% protein wheat or whatever.
You know, so they also correlate, like they also track the movement of the core of the earth because it's shifting.
Oh yeah.
And so if they don't, that's how they keep GPSs accurate.
Yeah.
Is by tracking that movement.
Yeah, you know, they wouldn't let us get GPS within like 6 or 8 inches or a foot, maybe. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, it was something.
Because the U.S. intentionally put, you know, an anti-correction or correction device in it where it scrambled it a little bit.
Yeah.
But now they've got it down to,
I think that,
obviously,
U.S. military sub-inch. Is using different stuff now. I think that their technology passed it far enough that now they're like, okay, you can use this because we're not using that anymore. Mm. I mean,
yeah.
You know, yeah.
You know, you see some of the stuff they got, but I mean, it's,
well, there's a lot of different.
So what, you know, we've talked a little bit and kind of hit a little bit on what they can do. What can NASA already provide to the farmer?
What we're looking at, maybe best to start with, like, what we're looking at doing right now. So the goal was for us to have projects to identify needs with growers here that we could meet. And so what we did was we started out on Sunday night with about 25 or 30 people in the room, and we were supposed to end at like 8, and it was like 10:30 before we left. You know, I mean, like, it was a really good meeting. People really talked about needs and that kind of stuff. And then we did that. We spent then, so that was Sunday. Then we did Monday night. We did Monday and then Tuesday. And Tuesday night, we repeated that same conversation, because then they had really seen on ground. And that was the thing that most of them said, was they did not realize how bad it was here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
About as far as water situation?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. They're like, no, we didn't realize. I mean, we knew, you know, you hear people say it, but they didn't realize it until they got here.
Well, it's kind of like we live in it, and so we see little tiny incremental changes, right. You know, but we don't see that because they're tiny incremental changes. But now we know it's dry. But, you know, when somebody that hasn't been here for 20 years and you go back and you're like, well, it's terrible there. And you're like, well, it's not that bad. You know,
yeah. Shocking. Yeah. But, you know, we were standing out, and we went to see Barry Evans, and he has a grain sorghum field that's just, I mean, it's just crisp.
Yeah.
It's like, it's crisp. It's like,
yeah,
cooked.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. So what came out of that, though, was like a conversation about planting dates and how, you know, if you could move the planting date further out, then so some farmers are planting as late as possible and having some success where they're not dropping the fruit because
they're missing the highest part of the heat.
Right. Yeah. Yes. And so they're looking at a couple of things. So one is, can you look at and help me predict how far I could go? Like, what is our, like, look at our freeze. What is the potential? Go as far back as possible and on a specific site to help a farmer say, okay, the chances of me having a freeze are this percent. And is that low enough for me to go ahead and plant later than I would normally plant? So, and which I think is actually a good idea because it's just staying warmer longer.
Well, but yeah, I mean, weather has just, as a whole, in my opinion, has just got to get better. Like, you can't trust anything. Really, well, 24 hours out is about maybe 48.
I'm not even sure 24 is.
That's the other thing. If we cut, so you got to remember, like this year we're seeing all this weird, like it's not predictable. How many NOAA stations were closed this year?
Well, but
they're just not staffed anymore.
There is a plethora of meteorologists that are looking at NOAA data that is still being collected. They're well educated that are doing this.
Well, I think if there's demand, the private sector would take. I mean, you know what you're talking about? Who knows what the crop is? Like, you know who else knows the crop is? The commodities traders.
The commodity traders.
They probably have room on some satellite that they leased that has whatever camera, and they have proprietary data that they get off that big tour that they do up in the Midwest, you know, where they go look at all the corn and stuff and give an estimate on.
I think it's the ProAg tour. A couple weeks ago.
And so that gives them, then they can go back and look at historical data through multiple crop insurance and say, well, hey, this county, we estimated it was going to be this, but we were off by. I guarantee you the people buying the commodities know more about the crop than the USDA
does.
Well,
I mean, and there's a conversation ongoing right now on helping NAS with some of that.
They're bad.
You know,
I mean, farmers are pissed too because it affects the price of corn. Like last year, I mean,
it was bad.
You know, I mean, like
they killed the price of corn last year.
Yeah,
on faulty data.
On faulty, it's just like it's like when the unemployment numbers come out. You know, like today or the employment number was like a big number. Well, next month it's going to be revised down. Like when they really know what it was.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yeah, I mean it's a complicated issue because part of it is, you know, they're getting their numbers from that survey.
Yeah,
and I don't know anybody that traced that survey as anything other.
Of it last year was they like changed the acres at the last, like, and they revised the acres, so they had 134 bushel of average or whatever. Well, all of a sudden they found like 2 or 3 million more acres, or 90 million more bushels.
Which is very odd when people have to turn in acreage reports.
Well, a lot of that, too, is
doesn't make any sense.
There's nobody out there that's farm. Maybe there is some, but nobody's farming some row crop commodity without having it insured. It
does not work on a scale big enough to make
impact.
No. Right. Yeah. Maybe hay farmers may not do it. But, I mean, even they probably do it now because you have the drought policies and stuff or rainfall the policies that you can get piggybacked on.
Yeah.
The forage thing.
Stuff, yeah.
Well, I don't know. I know that the satellites that the ones that they have prepared for in the future, like that there will be three that'll be launched specifically for agriculture, which would mean that we would collect data every 3 days. So the budget would cut into one.
The whole United States data every 3 days. Not so like your place is getting checked every three days. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, if you're doing every 3 days, you could start estimating, like, when you would want to harvest silage.
Yeah.
Through remote sensing. You can't do that right now because it's too far apart, too many days apart, you know?
Yeah.
But if the budget gets cut, which I don't know, I'm not sure that it will happen because it didn't happen last year because there were a lot of people that were like, we just can't do this, you know?
Nobody's going to cut anything. I think that's going to be a Democrat windfall in the fall, and or even they're going to win the House or one of them, and then they ain't going to be nothing done for 2 years.
Yeah,
which honestly is probably the best thing.
We can all cross our fingers and hope they get nothing done.
All I can say is that, well, I hope they do nothing for more than 2 years. I mean, if they didn't, but I mean, it's frustrating because you've got you know, you've got projects like this that you can see a benefit to. I mean, okay, they've got one. This is the thing that has always just amazed me from the first time you told me about it, and it's probably been a couple months, that they can from space tell you what your soil moisture content is,
right,
and tell you what your planting moisture looks like.
Yeah,
everywhere.
Well, and if you think about now you've got better, like those in-drip soil probes are better, but most soil probes for drip, they're not going to catch that top 4 inches or so.
Well, I'll tell you what.
And so if you combine that with remote sensing.
You know, I've played with, I don't know how many different types of soil moisture probes me and Andy have dealt with, looked into, experimented with, looked at the data from. And I mean, you know, out here, a soil moisture probe is just basically tells you, hey, don't turn your water off. You know, I mean, let's drop $10,000 for set to have a piece of data that tells us, an instrument that tells us, hey, it's hot, dry, don't stop watering. Or, hey, look, you got 3 inches of rain. We don't, you know, so it's those information for us is less critical. I mean, from where we're standing on, because irrigation decisions are based upon, hey, the sun's up, it's hot.
Well, I could see where it could work on, like, let's say somebody does have fairly adequate drip irrigation on cotton.
Yes, yeah.
And they're doing, a set. Maybe it takes them 2 days to get across it, or, you know, and then, okay, well, then maybe as it gets hotter, it needs to be, like, everybody always starts their pivots out on, like, 10%, right?
Yeah.
It takes a week to make a circle. And then it starts burning up ahead of the water, and you're like, okay, I'm going to turn it up to 12.5. And then you look at it, and you're like at 30% where it's trying to make a circle every day, and you're not ever getting ahead. Yeah. But maybe there's some way they could do the interval of the water it gets into drought situations.
What I was getting to was there are places that it does matter. You know, that those moisture probes work. You know, they were designed for something.
Well,
you
and, know, and the work. Ones that Indrip has, they have a horizontal tape that the plants grow into. So they're not just taking up moisture. They're taking up a lot more data.
I want to move somewhere where they have so much water they have to put tile down to get rid of it.
Can you imagine? Right?
That's what I want to
read somewhere the other day that infrastructure is like 100 years old.
There's a bunch of it that's not.
I'm telling you right now.
Well, there's stuff that's not. I mean, all that land evidently was a swamp.
Yeah.
That they're doing that tile. They totally changed. But that's where people first settled, I guess, after the colonies was up in that area.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Iowa, there's a big conundrum in Iowa, in that the nitrates in their water are astronomically high. They have the highest cancer rates in the country, but they also have among the highest rates of alcohol consumption, among the highest rates of smoking.
Well, Wisconsin, and, I think, it beats everybody on alcohol.
Yeah.
I think I've been doing a lot of deep dives on like where the wine market's going and stuff. And
interesting.
Wisconsin, I don't know how they get any work done up there.
What in the world?
I don't know because it's pretty up there. I've been up there. It is pretty, but. One of the things, but the other thing that they got the highest nitrate levels in their water, and they're saying, you know, and they're obviously a lot of that is coming from that is big corn country, and they're tiling stuff, and so that, you know, you get a shot of anhydrous on, and then you get 6 inches of rain, and it goes right through that soil profile, right to their tile, and dumped right into.
Yeah, they all dump them into creeks, right?
Yes.
Yeah, they just dump it right into the tributary.
Well, that's why there's a whole dead zone down at the coast from all of that. I mean, it's a thing, but I mean, Kansas is the same way. Kansas has I can't remember how many million acres area that is their water, groundwater is contaminated by nitrogen. Kansas, they had to go in and they're having to haul in water, but like, because I can't remember, they found out because of, I can't remember what type of cancer it was, but so much of it in this.
Kansas is such an amazing state.
Kansas. I do.
I do too, because it is.
I've only been to Kansas City. I'm not a fan.
Listen. If you've got a city that's more than 10,000 people, I'm more than likely not that big of a fan. But it's like a bipolar state. It is. I mean, because it's like Texas is bipolar too. You know, you got the dry side of Texas where we are over here, and then you got over there where it, you know, rains and people live by the droves. But in Kansas, it seems like it's so compressed because you can get across it. You know, I mean, it doesn't take, you know, I can't drive all day and still be in the same state.
Yeah.
And so you hit western Kansas and it's really odd because it's like every time I've been there, which granted I have not spent a bunch of time in Western Kansas, but it's always seems like it's dry. Mm-hmm. But their grass will be waist deep. You know, I was there last October, and obviously nothing was growing, and they'd harvested stuff. And I was asking a farmer, I said, "Well, how was you?" He said, "Well, it's pretty dry this year. We didn't really, you know, get the rains we normally got." And I'm like looking at the CRP field across from it, and it's literally waist deep at least in grass, and just solid. And I'm like going, "How much rain do y'all usually get?"
Well, you know, there's a
east and it's gorgeous.
There's a line of latitude that you can see it on a map. Of where it rains and where it starts the demarcation of where it doesn't rain as much. And it's like, it's getting really close to the Mississippi River. Like it keeps moving east. You can see the you know, over the last 30 years.
That's why the Tornado Alley's moved east.
It's moved east and north. Yeah, I mean, like way up into past Missouri, up into Iowa. Yeah. I see these guys that, you know, are like, "This is the first hail I've ever got. You know, where are you at?" Well, I'm in southern Indiana or whatever. And it hailed my car. I'm like, we don't even get rain to even have hail anymore, hardly.
Right.
I mean, but when it comes here, you know, it's like the size of the hail here is getting bigger, too. It is. Like when it hails, it's bigger than it used to be, too.
Well, and I know when I was in Poland, we were in a city that had flooded like the night before, and it had hailed the first time in 100 years. There was literally no one there who had ever seen hail before. Now, think about how freaky that would be like.
It'd be like snow in Miami or something.
Yes, it's just like, what? No one had ever even seen it in anyone's lifetime. Had anyone ever seen it?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's pretty nerve-wracking.
Circle back around the NASA a little bit.
Back to the planting dates. They did this. They did a project with NASA. Corn growers in Kansas did, and they got the planting dates moved.
That would be big. That would be a move that like 99% of the population would not even kind of understand, but could potentially be really big.
I think it'd be super helpful. But and you know, because they're like, we know exactly how to do it and what needs to be done because they're the ones that did it before. So, which is Ignacio Campiti, who's the one that's at Purdue. Mm-hmm. And he's the one that really kind of he and Ray Flickner in Kansas kind of created this brainchild of the idea of the farmer collaboration with the on-farm research with a researcher that's overseen by NASA. So it's kind of their idea, born out of their friendship, you know. So he led that effort in Kansas and will lead the effort here as well. And so if anybody wants to participate by that, we'll just need... We need some information from them. We need, you know, yields and dates and that kind of stuff. Planting dates, harvest dates, yields.
And, you know, most of that stuff is, I mean,
they have it exists.
It's
in the FSA database because you have to tell them, like, what the plant date was.
Yeah. And I mean, for us, I'm like, I think that we could even just say, you know, call and have the FSA office, you know, put it together and we'll come and pick it up.
I mean, like, do it even easier than that. Like, if you have a file that has all the data in it, just put it in AI and, like, tell it to do it. Like, parse it. I mean,
right. Yes.
I know that's a huge file, but as they get compute going up and stuff, I mean, I'm using stuff that probably has the 4,000 or 5,000 files that it can glean from. And surely they have computers that are better than my 5-year-old Mac to do it on.
USDA?
Yeah.
No, USDA does
not. No, they don't.
They're ancient. They spent...
Yeah.
Now I'm talking about NASA.
Oh, NASA.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
but
that data is uploaded to somewhere in USDA. So there's a file that has all the planted acres. Even if they had to do it county by county and load every county in separately in a different Excel spreadsheet or whatever.
Right, yeah.
They could still go through.
I don't know if they... So this is one thing that I thought was really interesting that someone said is like it's been like as I hate to use the word destructive, but like this whole the last, you know, 2 years, there's just been this huge dismantling of a lot of what people would call like sacred cows. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No president before has ever touched this department or this for this. So everybody's kind of like on this shaky ground, but what it's also done, they said, is it's really given them the freedom to start getting out of their silos and collaborating with other agencies. instead of having to repeat what they're doing, they can go over and say, hey, we don't really want to, we don't have the capacity to do this, but you do. And so that's, I think NASA just hasn't been very active with USDA. And so
NASA's also never really had any competition, and now they do.
Well, you know, that's funny because I ask, so the guy that was, he was the head, the administrator of NASA in the first Trump administration, and he was on the tour in Kansas, and he works for an aerospace. And I said, well, I don't, what I understand is, do you see them as a competitor? And he was like, absolutely not. They are, everyone calibrates their tools from NASA. Like, we would not have and could not have the industry that we have if we don't have NASA.
Yeah.
It is that important. You know, and so, which I thought was really interesting, because I've wondered that same thing too. Like, are you competing? But I know what, I can remember it was like $26 billion a year is what that old 1970s Landsat satellite brings in commercial use. So, I mean, people are building everything from this, you know.
I think they said the other day, because SpaceX is about to start getting in the phone business. Not making a, well, they may make a phone, I doubt it. Elon said he's never going to make a phone, but just the service part of it. But it's a $600 billion business. Just what you pay for having access to cell towers and stuff like that.
Exactly.
But they've already floated, you know, Dr. Oz floated about a week ago. You know, we're in $40 trillion worth of debt. $40 trillion.
Yeah.
So that's why they keep looking at the 10-year and the 30-year note. I mean, like, it keeps going up. It's bumping up against 5%. Well, that's what, but he floated the other day. He's like, you know, if people would just, that feel great, would just work one more year than they plan to retire at, it would save us $1 trillion.
Yeah.
So he's already, they've already floated. They're going to raise Social Security.
Yeah,
the age that you can take Social Security, that's the only way. And let me finish real quick. The younger generation is going to be all for that.
They don't realize
like we paid into that thing, way more than we're ever going to get back out of it. Some people pay all their life and never get anything back because they die early. So it can be a popular thing that they do because they're going to do that anyway. But the whole thing, it all goes back to the budget, and it all goes back to our debt.
Yes, it is.
That's why they're looking at cutting stuff.
There's a really great a conservative economist, I can't remember her name, that did a podcast, and they were asking, like, what is one of the things that we could do? And they were like, if everyone over that made over a certain $1 million a year just didn't take their Social Security.
Yeah.
Now, this was a podcast from a year and a half ago.
But she
said that would fix our problem.
Yeah, but the government should give them back the money they paid in it.
Right.
Or just call
it. No, she just said they should just donate it is what she's saying.
Call
if they
it
just
a
said,
tax or whatever.
Here, I mean, we're not going to take it. And they were like, it could start in the legislature.
Well, the other thing that they could do that I think they're going to do is right now, if you make over like $184,000, you pay Social Security tax up to that, but anything over that, you don't.
Right.
So if they made that where it went all the way up to however much money you made, then that would bring in quite a bit of money. Because I mean, you get two dinks. I mean, they're working and making $100,000 a year, $150,000 bucks a year. That's $300,000, which I read the other day that really they think the average middle class income now is somewhere above $200,000. To you know, when you put it all, it's not in Lubbock, Texas, but it's, if you
average it
across the United States.
I mean, I've got two dinks in my family, and that's, you know, they're just starting out, and they're making almost as much as my wife and I.
So dinks is double income, no kids.
Yeah,
right.
That's what a dink is.
Yeah, but it's funny. It's, you know, you look at there's a huge hate fest on boomers. Which is just,
that's why I'm saying that's the only thing
that's a two-way street, right?
No, it is. But the problem is that's an easy.
They're both.
It's
easy
an easy thing. Like as the boomers die off, and that money goes to Gen X. I think the smallest generation that's left. I think there's less, but it may be because it's because of smaller time time horizons is why there's less Gen X people than there are. But they're going to, that's the only way. I mean, if you just look at it from.
But it's, you know, it's funny because you see, keep seeing headlines like boomers now control more wealth than any other generation. Like, well, we've had massive inflation, which driven the price of everything up. You know, they've also been in the workforce longer than any generation that's still working in the workforce. And so you've had more time to raise, to have money and to, you know, buy, you know, 30 years ago, they might have bought a vacation cottage on a lake. They may have bought a you know, $75,000 house on LBJ, you know,
now, that's 40
years
ago,
and it's now worth $1 million. Right. Well, they didn't sock away anything extra. They didn't, they just...
Well, and their parents, go back before that, lived through the Depression.
Yeah.
So they were raised on parents that saw everything they had gone.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And so that still carried over to the boomers, and it's a little bit, you know, less from the Gen X because of the stock market.
I'm laughing because we've managed to go from NASA and satellites to...
Well, it started with budget cuts, right?
Budget cuts,
I mean, that's right. I mean, that's...
There's always a point that we never go somewhere without it being...
No, I mean, that's what starts the interesting stuff is when you get off the road.
That's right.
Yeah.
You stay on the highway, it's not very interesting, you know?
It's true.
But you get off in the...
Get off on the interstate.
Speaking of getting... This is completely random. So
what
I was...
About quail?
No, it's not not at all about quail. It's about Texas Country Reporter.
Oh,
so
okay.
I was going on the Instagram.
Yeah, he's up here in the High Plains.
Yeah, he's up here in the High Plains. Well, the other day he was at some little diner that is on Route 66, and it's like the middle, almost the exact middle of where
Route 66 is. Is that where he saw the traces of the Texas guy?
I think so. So anyway, he was there, and he said, I was just sitting at the counter eating lunch, and he said, I hear this guy talking with a funny accent, and I start listening to him. And it's a guy from England that was going to come and was going to walk the Route 66 or travel Route 66, something like that. Anyway, and he does, and I think COVID hit, and so he got canceled. So he's like, well, you know what? I'm just going to do it anyway. And so he got a treadmill in his house, and he started walking on a treadmill in his house, and he would research the part of Route 66 he was going to be on and what was on it. And then he came back over here, and he was visiting those things, and he just happened to run into him there. But I thought that was the wildest thing.
That's
but that had nothing to do with anything whatsoever. So
no, that was an unpaved county road that you went down there.
That was an unpaved county road.
Or not even dirt road.
That was a two-track in BLM land right there.
That the county commissioner hadn't taken care of in 5 years.
Yeah, it's in no man's land.
But so isn't NASA coming out with an app? Don't they?
Yes. So we released an app. That is one thing that came out of the first meeting that we had in Commodity Classic is let's get an app out. And so farmers that are in the FIAT that are participating with the farmer innovation team, they have it right now. Basically, they've been tasked to break it. You know, here, take it, break it.
Yeah, I'm doing that right now with the deal at work. Like, I did this. Like, don't trust it, but, like, try to break it. Like,
yes, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so they're breaking it. And also, they're also saying, here's what we need. So you can get it, and they'll put your field maps on there, and you can get all the information, all the different kinds of information that you want.
Yeah.
So, and they're saying, can you get, what about this? And so the more they're playing around with it, the more things they're going, hey, could we get this? And could we get this? In fact, I was talking to somebody from one of the groundwater districts this week at the groundwater summit, and they were like, I want stuff like that we need on an app. Like, can we do that? Like, yeah, that's the kind of stuff. That's the
you
kind of thing.
You can do anything right now.
Yeah.
If you have somebody that just knows how to, which is, it's not
amazing.
That hard.
It's amazing. Mm-hmm.
It really isn't that. It really isn't that hard.
You just
got
to be persistent and, you know, like to get from AI what you need.
It's, you just have to know what.
You have to know
the information's there. All you have to ask is the right question.
That's right.
And the show's resident troglodyte even used ChatGPT 2 weeks ago for the first time ever.
What show?
Our resident troglodyte. That's me.
Oh. Well, I don't even know what that word is. It sounds pretty awful, though.
I don't either.
It's
what is it?
It's a guy. Somebody doesn't like technology.
Oh,
not a big technology.
An
beginner. Not a beginner.
An beginner.
I'm just not a. I'm not an beginner. I'm just not a user.
Well, I'll tell you what. You be if you start.
I'm like, man. If I do something that I have to use AI for, I've gone on an off ramp that I'm not sure I want to get onto.
Well, it's
It's pretty nice, but, honestly.
But when is that app supposed? When is it?
So it'll they're going to release it in like around Thanksgiving sometime.
Okay.
So it's kind of right now.
Do we
it's
know the name
sitting
for
there.
It?
I don't think it has a name.
Okay. Well, check back with us around Thanksgiving. We'll as soon as we know a name, we'll
maybe we need to have a naming it contest. I don't know. It's just the NASA farm app.
Hey, listen, put a dollar in entry into it, and we can see if we can.
It's gonna be there. You go. Exactly.
$50 million they can get right there. Just everybody in the U.S. has to throw in a dollar and name it.
You know what I've suggested several times, and if there's anybody listening that has any influence at tech, I think this is a great idea. I have suggested. This is really off the topic. So I have suggested that they, at every game where they have a theme, so like they have veterans theme.
There's a cotton game.
And there's there's an ag game.
Ag game, yeah.
That they pick a veteran. So Veterans Day, you pick a veterans nonprofit from tech, and then the opponent, they pick a veterans nonprofit from their area, and then you have a text a dollar campaign during the football game. And if everyone texts a single dollar, it's like $62,000.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it would be the skin off anybody's nose.
Yeah.
And how many people are, I mean, every student can text a single dollar. And there, you know, there'll be people that will text more than that. You can compete. And think about what good PR that would be for tech.
Yeah.
I mean, like, has anyone ever done this? Probably not.
Yeah.
Tech would be the first people to do it. It would be an amazing PR.
You know, it didn't happen back in the olden days because they didn't have the money to text dollars at that time. You know, the olden days, back in the 90s, in the aughts.
Well, they sure do now. I mean, think about just the people that are there watching that game. They come every week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And think about how influential it was when Utah came and all of the students, like these people just, they gave money to all of our nonprofits. They spent time at the food bank and they did all these different.
Yeah, that's very different. Yes. That's BYU, not Utah. You know,
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah, Brigham Young. Yeah, yeah, yeah. But they're from Utah.
Yes, they are. They are. But
that's not the only thing
they don't. They don't like each other. And BYU is the one that gave.
Yes. But I mean, it made national news.
Yeah. Well, I think that we did something like that, and they kind of returned the favor or something. I can't. You know.
No, there was somebody here that was sick.
Well, it was the barber. Right?
Yeah,
I think they
right.
Did, they,
it was the barber's wife that had
something
cancer.
Something happened. Yes,
they do
the
that.
Tech barber.
They do something like that everywhere they go.
Yeah.
Everywhere they go. They
I think
do.
They call it love bombing.
Yeah, Dusty's been there.
I have been there.
He watched Tech play out there. You got free ice cream, right?
I watched Tech be on the field out there. I don't think I saw him actually play, but they were on the field.
Yeah.
At the same time, they played not very good. Which is about par for the course. I go on a road, go to a road game thinking, oh, this will be great. And I'm like going, okay, it's halftime. We've got our free ice cream. Let's go.
Yeah.
That's the best thing about it. You get that in their visitor section. They have people people that come through there. I can't remember when it is, relatively early in the game. And they give you free ice cream from their creamery. And that ice cream is incredible.
Wow.
I mean, it is really ridiculously good. Yeah. Like, it's thank God it comes in a small container, because I would not have been able to get out of that place. It was so good.
Mm.
Yes. And
wow. I love ice cream. But that's off the topic, too. So, but if you do have an ice cream, if you're an ice cream company and you want to sponsor our show. Yeah.
Bluebell. I know the guy that runs the Bluebell here. You might do
that. Hey, Bluebell. We love Bluebell.
So the app's coming out around Thanksgiving.
Yes, app's coming out. And then we also are going to look at quantifying how much brush we have, like mesquite and salt cedar, to find out how much water we're losing to those invasive species. And we're going to look at wildfire prevention measures through remote sensing, some things like that. And then we have another project that this one I'm most excited about is it's strategic row crop to grazing land or dry land conversion. So it'd be paying to farmers income replacement for turning off their wells.
Yeah.
Leaving infrastructure in place so that if there's drought conditions, you don't have to sell off herds. You know, we can still diversify.
That's not the NASA program, though. That's something else.
NASA is going to help us with that program because it would be looking at, you'd be looking at, first of all, you want to quantify, and you got to verify how much groundwater was used.
Mm-hmm.
And so you can do that. So say a farmer turns in his data for X amount of years, then they actually can then verify that that's how much water was used.
Okay.
And so they'll kind of be the verifier, certifier type thing. So we're actually going to go to a meeting in a big textile meeting in October to start announcing. When you say we,
you're referring to Sarah, correct?
So yes, but we'll be there with like Cotton Trust Protocol, who was going to partner with us. HSI is going to partner with us, and Sorghum is interested in you know, being in some type of partnership. Which, by the way, Global Sorghum Conference is in Lubbock, not this week, but the next.
Mm.
Really? It's going to be amazing. And NASA Acres will be there speaking.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Yep. I think it's Ignacio that's speaking. So
I didn't, I did not realize the Global,
Conference was here. Mm-hmm. It's a big deal. Yeah.
Yeah, especially for an area that's lost almost all of its grain sorghum infrastructure.
Exactly.
Losing that
Well, and that's the whole reason to look at something that's strategic. So, like, if we said, NASA, help us identify, like, what wells we should keep, which are our strongest wells to keep.
Mm-hmm.
And then you say, it's a hypothetical farmer somewhere has two wells that are really great, and then surrounded by, and when I say wells, I mean, like, a circle that has 14 wells.
Right. Yeah.
And, right, you know what I mean? So, but they have, so they, you identify whatever, it's like a section or a quarter section, and then they put, you know, the other into the program.
Yeah.
So, then that, we want to look and see what's happening at the well that they're using. You know what I mean? We want to keep it, being able to see, like, is this helping?
Yeah.
To retain some water there, and so that they can continue to grow crop there and have water longer there, without, how far can you do that without it damaging your infrastructure?
Yeah.
Because once the 20-man cotton gin's gone, it's gone.
Yeah.
You're not going to get it back. But I'm like, to me, it's like you're either going to hit a brick wall going 100 miles an hour or going 20. And there's a lot less damage if you're going 20.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, a lot of the, you know, it's like we had, good grief. His name was on my tongue. Buster Jen.
Oh, yeah, Dan.
Dan
Taylor. We had him on a couple weeks ago, and he was talking about how, you know, brown baling has changed ginning. Mm-hmm. You know, now you don't have to have a gin, you know, that's really close to your farm. We're not dragging cotton trailers or even sending module trucks out for modules. Mm-hmm. You're going out there and loading a semi-load of round bales up and taking half the farm in one, you know, in a go.
Yeah.
And so that's changed a lot of the infrastructure demands that you have to have on it. But it's still, you know, that's still a... Infrastructure, to me, is still the number one limiting factor on what can be grown. What can be grown on diversification, 100%.
Well, and I think that's one of the things that makes this project appealing to funders is that they, let's just say it's, you know, a large company that's name might start with a G, and they say, you know, we want to help participate. We want to put X million dollars in or something. Well, what they're getting out of it is what you call a water offset credit. So like a carbon credit.
Right.
Because that water is, you know, not going to be used. You know, it's staying there.
Yeah.
They're turning it off.
I've noticed. Have y'all noticed a significant shift in the way data centers are like approaching stuff?
Did you see,
they're fixing to build a new water tower for Turkey all of a sudden.
Uh-huh.
Help their infrastructure. Like, they finally realized that. And you got to give a little bit of credit to the state is saying, like, okay, hold on a second. You guys are getting taken advantage of.
I never understood how.
I think you give credit to the people who've been screaming to high heaven about it because the state wouldn't have done nothing if they hadn't.
That is true. But the original article that some chick wrote out of the New York Times about how much water was used was way high.
Yeah.
Way high. And it just went out like, a viral thing.
Yes.
So everybody thinks, oh, I use this.
Well, yes.
I promise you the farms that touches that data center use way more water than that.
Well, that's what I've seen. That.
And they're going to figure out some other way to cool it anyway.
That's what I've seen them saying. Well, we don't use as much water as ag. And I'm like, yeah, but you don't eat, I'm not eating a data center.
So, you know,
but
if
that's,
officially, I mean, I think this is just like what they, I think that they didn't all have bad intentions, that I think there are, I think the folks that are coming in and legit already like have someone that's going to be in that data center.
Mm-hmm.
They're not just speculating. Those are people that have a better reputation. But the problem is, and I've seen this with so many different like brands and retailers, is they want to do something for their ESG. That's the word, you know, their environmental standing with their investors.
Yeah.
So they hire somebody, and bless their hearts, they've graduated from a great school, you know, on the West Coast, and they live in a beautiful West Coast city, and they have a great idea. And one example I've heard is like that someone was like, they hired someone, not even local, to build a sculpture that's a, I'm like, I have no idea what it looks like, but apparently people in the town, they put this sculpture on the river as a gift to the town, and like the town has a petition to get it removed. Mm-hmm. Because everyone hates it.
Yeah.
You know, and they're like, why? We don't want this. Yeah. You know what I mean? And they're like, or somebody said, well, we did something, you know, we cleaned up a brownfield site. Well, if you're living in an area where no one cares about brownfield sites, I mean, who cares?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, just to be honest, all of Midland and Odessa is like pretty much a brownfield site. I mean, just go down to the Permian Basin.
Yeah.
It's like, it's everywhere, you know? It's not something that like people are, but people do care if they get a new school. But here's the difference to me. A new school in 50 years is going to have to be repaired. And it's important to put that investment there. But if you help diversify economy, you know, where you like now you have a, you totally have a brand new infrastructure for something that you've never had
yeah.
before, then that continues, you know, and you get taxes from that, and it's going to continue to be beneficial yeah. way after said company that starts with a G leaves.
Mm-hmm. Well, I heard, and I there's a couple of things I wanted to get to. One was during the luncheon that I went to on Tuesday?
Monday.
Was it Monday? We're in
Brownfield. We're up on Monday.
Okay, mm-hmm. on Monday. Yeah. I went to the one on Monday. I had them come up on Tuesday. I couldn't make it to that one. So on Monday, my phone doesn't ring very often, but it rang during that time.
Yeah.
and so I was, as I was going out, I was hearing them talking about being able to measure the depth of the aquifer with these satellites. Did I dream that in my head?
I don't think that they can do that.
Okay.
That had to be like ground penetrating radar.
They were doing it magnetically.
So magnetically, well, that's how they tell. Well, maybe so. I know that's how they tell if water.
So maybe is I used. Did. Maybe I did dream it.
Groundwater. Groundwater use. That's how they tell groundwater use.
Okay.
So there is. If you're ever in D.C., you can go and tour NASA headquarters. It's in D.C. downtown. You know where all the other headquarters mm-hmm. stuff are. So they have this like chandelier that's coming down. Like you know, at the entrance, it's like two stories, and it's coming down. It's just glass. Strips of glass coming down from the ceiling, and it lights up with the name of the satellite and then all the data that's coming in on all of these little, looks like strings of light all the way down to the floor, and it is going constantly. One will stop, and then 2 seconds later there's another name, and then all this data is just pouring down like raindrops.
Sounds like the Matrix, that movie, The Matrix,
yep,
you know, where it's just all the green dots
yep.
and the computer
yes.
screen.
It is totally insane. And like when we think about like AI data centers, like how valuable they are to us. I mean, and I don't know. I think a lot about this reminds me kind of the Y2K scare. You know, like everybody was terrified when, you know, we went from 99. All the computers were going to crash.
Man, I'm not sure there's this many people.
It reminds me more of the Cold War, like where. It's a
well,
arms,
maybe
like
so.
It's kind of like an arms
it
race.
It is an arms race. It yeah. definitely is.
Between us and
yes.
China.
Yes.
And I think that's mm-hmm. why that's why the government's behind it, is because they can see.
Yes.
That, and there's some things that they don't want in here from other countries
well,
that they're
honestly,
trying to figure out. But, you know, their AIs, when they test them out, they put them in what's called a sandbox, which is like a deal that kind of keeps them
from getting outside of where they're testing them.
Right.
And it's pretty scary what those things have tried to do. Like, it's tried to blackmail people because it's found, like, the CEO's texting or something, or send an email to some other lady that's not his wife. And, well, like, we're going to blackmail you. Don't shut us down. Or
we'll release this letter. Like, you know, don't you think that goes to the fact that it's pulling all this data in, and that's what it's pulling in, is like parts of our world there. That's why, like, Anthropic is like, has somebody hired that's literally teaching it ethics.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and what ethics do they have to be teaching?
But it's just basic ethics. You know what I mean? Like, what you would take in college.
I mean, yeah, it's still, but it's
Socratic.
It is, but it's still, you worry about who's teaching it.
Well,
what?
Yeah, right.
Like,
yeah.
What are you training it to
do? Yes, to do.
It's you know, I don't get. I mean, it's amazing what it can do, and it's terrifying what it can do. And, you know, it's here whether we want it or not. But you're going back to the arms race stuff. Really, the biggest arms race between us and China is actually energy.
They have way more energy than we do,
and they are beating the thunder out of the rest of the world.
Yeah, we'll get them though, because there's so much stuff that's wasted. Forget Venezuela. Yeah. There's so much stuff that's wasted. Gas that's flared off that could be running turbines and stuff. I mean, they just did one of the largest geothermal things in Utah. They just started putting it online. They think geothermal will be as big as solar eventually.
Yeah. I mean, but it's, I mean, you know, I'm not even talking, I mean, like, just discount solar entirely and don't put another solar panel up in China. And it's going to take decades for us to catch them. But they're bringing... What is it, 30 new coal-fired plants a year?
Yeah, they don't have environmental concerns. They just do whatever they're doing.
There's a new coal-fired plant opening in China basically every other week.
Yeah.
That's why it's so important we unlock nuclear here.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And, I mean, well, they're building nuclear plants, too. I mean, they've built God only knows how many nuclear plants since the last one we opened was, you know. And nuclear's changed so much now. It's not even the same thing that you had with Chernobyl.
Well, and I think, you know, they're also reclaiming a lot of, like, they've just ruined a lot of their land, you know, so made it where it wasn't farmable, but they've gone back and have been working to reclaim all that. Because so I think food independence and energy independence is like
it's
top priority
for them. It's going to be interesting to see what happens with them, because their population demographics look bleak in China. I mean, bleak. Like, ours don't look great.
Nobody's
but
does.
Theirs, I mean, it. The only place that, well,
when I hear people say, we've got all these people to feed, I'm like, that is just, I mean, we're going to peak like at 2050, right?
Something
our
like
population
that.
Is.
Yeah.
And
then
it's like over the cliff.
Yeah.
Decline. Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know?
But there's several geopolitical people that I follow, and I'm not a genius on it, but they think that China's already hit the tipping point. They've already peaked and are collapsing to the point where it can't come back. But one of the things I did want to talk about too was I heard, and I did not have time to dig into the details of this because I heard about it about, you know, an hour before I got here. Apparently, there has been an executive order where the USDA the part of the USDA that feeds like prisons and schools and stuff like that, there has been an executive order to locate, to try to buy beef as local as you can to an area, to where your area is. And it goes back into Washington to deal with Cisco.
Well, that would be great. I mean, they should be doing that. Should
Who
be doing,
was it? Somebody?
They grow a bunch of their stuff, though. It's got to be contractors that...
I just heard of I don't know if it's HEB or United, but they're doing a deal... It's about with local beef producers, but I think they said you could get 80 to 85% lean. I want to say for $4 a pound.
Wow.
Or $4.99. What is it right now? I think it's like seven or eight, but I wonder if that's cheap stuff. But it says they're connecting with local people, but didn't the U.S. just import a whole bunch of beef and it has
3 million pounds of ground beef, I think?
Oh, it's way more than that, right?
Oh. I think
was a lot. I thought it was like 25 million.
It was a three. It was either 3 or 30.
Well, it's 3%. I think is what it was. I mean, it's not like a huge.
But Trump was wanting them to sell it for $5 a pound. I mean, that's like, I don't know what they're paying for it.
What I have learned is that most of the ground beef that we consume is not U.S. ground beef. Most of the beef that's grown in the U.S. is grown for the steaks and roasts and stuff like that. And there's very little waste that they use to put into the ground beef. And most of the ground beef is cattle that come from South and Central America and Australia. It comes as a huge chunk. A surprisingly large amount comes from Australia because their beef is typically not suitable for what would be for the U.S. steak market.
Yeah,
because they don't raise a whole lot of USDA prime,
right?
In the deserts of Western Australia.
Yeah,
you know, and so
To me, that's where we have a huge opportunity. I mean, that is a market demand that we're not anywhere near meeting.
No, yeah,
you know, and so
there has been some easing of restrictions on being able to get for a cattleman to actually be able to sell.
But you know, meat. The other thing is, I think that we've done probably a disservice to ourselves in trying to explain subsidies to people that it's actually like subsidizing your grocery cost.
Yeah.
Because now it feels like we all think we have a constitutional right to cheap groceries.
Yeah. And that's what, I mean, that's what it was designed for. I mean, that's what I was told in multiple different economics, both ag economics and
well, it was designed because we had too much.
And
we were growing too much, and they had to find a way to do something with it and keep farmers in business. And so they bought it and started giving it away. And they still do. I mean, if you go to the food bank, a lot of the stuff that you load up in those boxes in the food banks are grown, you know, on different farms, beans and rice, and it tells you where they're from.
I don't imagine there's not a whole lot of rice production that I would. Well, there is probably a fair amount.
Well,
I know there's a lot of rice production. I just don't know how much of it goes into that food stream.
Every time I've been there, I've packed a bag of rice. Now, I haven't worked since COVID, but I used to work twice a week or something, packing beans and rice.
Twice a week more than me.
That's a great place to go.
So St. Benedict's. Wait, I'm going to plug St. Benedict's because we do that.
That's
I'm on the board
place.
There, and we started feeding like 200 people, and then now it's gone to like 340 hot meals a day.
A day? I didn't know it was daily.
Yeah, it's daily. Every day of the week. Yeah.
Wow.
Hot meals every day of the week. They have volunteers that do it. It's totally nonprofit. I mean, it's a really good, it's a ministry. I mean, honestly.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's amazing, like you can tell the numbers, like when everybody's EBT card gets like filled, we're not as busy, but then like towards the end of the month when the EBT stuff starts running out, we get busy. We may do 400 or something in a day, but yeah, the local people have really stepped up and supported that place. So I'll plug St. Benedict.
Where is it?
It is it's on Q, north of Park Towers, south of Park Towers apartment. Mm-hmm. It used to be really cool. It's on Q by Orlando, right across from Orlando. St. Benedict's is right south of it.
Okay.
So, I mean, there's a bus stop right by it. So, I mean, we get, you know.
People come from all over, probably.
Yeah, I mean, there's, you know, there may be a grandmother that has like 8 kids that she's taking care of from her 4 that don't take care of them. And it's a good ministry.
Yeah. It is always shocking. Like, I people want to go back and listen to the, I've done a 2 with the Chase Head at the food bank.
Oh, we should have. We should have our ED on here sometime from St. Benedict's.
Oh, exactly. Lynette. Let's do it.
Yeah, we should do that.
That's a great idea because I was thinking about having like the United Way director because they're really trying to expand outside of just Lubbock too.
Yeah.
But I think it's good for we just don't realize how many hungry people there are.
Well, but also, I just don't get into that because there's a lot of competition between nonprofits for money to get to stay operate,
sure.
And so like some people don't want you to know how much money they have in their bank account when they do canned food drives and like you're like they're gonna run out. Well, no, they have like millions of dollars in the bank, like doing fine. I mean, we're like month to month.
I did some looking around, which I feel like the government does a lot of things that it would be better served more. The more local control we can get on it, the better I think it's going to be. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of variability in there, and it's very convoluted and complex. But anyway, but I was looking at, you know, what can be done with NGOs. And there's ProPublica, mm-hmm. I think, they have got a website where you can go and you can look at the financials of an NGO.
Well, NGOs have to release that every
990s.
I don't think a nonprofit has to, do they?
Yes.
Yeah. Only if they take...
If it's over 50,000 a year, I think then you have to do more than...
Well, I'm pretty sure there's a lot of people that don't know how much money some of these...
That's what I was saying.
They're not an NGO. They're like...
It was nonprofits. It was not NGOs. It was nonprofits. Is what yeah. It, yeah. But that NGOs, a lot of... Not all NGOs are nonprofits, but all nonprofits would be NGOs.
It was if you take any government money, you have to make that available.
But those, and you can see how much money they brought in. What brought it up was this.
It's on the IRS website.
It was a nonprofit hospital in Oregon or Washington State, something up there. It served the rural part of the state, and they fired all of their emergency room staff and replaced them with a physicians group that was owned by private equity. Mm-hmm. They contracted it. And they're like, well, it's, you know, we're financial headwinds. And the guy said, I went to this thing, said, didn't know it existed, went and looked at it. And they made $104 million. They netted $104 million the year they did this.
Whoa.
And so
it wasn't a financial move.
No. But then you start, I think on that thing, you can also see what, you know, how much they pay for directors
kind of
stuff. And
some
of those,
all that.
Like, mm-hmm. you know, and I'm going to throw a curveball because I'm going to say Pheasant Forever, not quail. So, okay. But Pheasant Forever is like 96%, I think, of what they receive goes back out.
That's a really high number.
And it's an insanely high number.
Yeah.
And it's one of the reasons that you have a lot of turnover down on their biologists and stuff because they just can't pay.
They're not paying.
Yeah.
Some of these things, it's like completely inverted. And they're like 96% of it stays in the director's pockets and the board's pockets,
yes.
And 4% of it
that's
goes out.
And that's
why I'm not calling any names because I don't know any. I just know that the numbers are
there. And one of the things as we've talked is we've been raising money for this grassroots conversion. I mean, this grassland conversion thing, which we call rooted returns, because part of it is, and you take the beef or whatever protein they're growing, and it's water smart. And so if you can then market that through local restaurants and grocery stores, especially in Lubbock, to consumers, to educate them, because how many people who live in Lubbock understand what is going to happen to the economy of Lubbock when we hit the brick wall of no irrigation?
Yeah,
at any mile an hour.
At any mile an hour. That people don't understand. Like, it's not half, but it's quite a bit of the income of Lubbock runs off of.
Well, that's when I was.
What's outside the
I
hub.
Was listening to the podcast up in Iowa, and they were talking about, you know, getting this out, and, you know, farmers, you know, and these ranchers are still spending money. Yeah, I mean, everybody does, but the farmer dollar turns over in the economy more than any other sector. Let me rephrase that. As of about 15, 20 years ago, the farmer dollar turned around over more times in the in a local economy than any other dollar that was spent.
Interesting.
So, like, if a dollar came in to you get a subsidy, you get $100, that farmer, and back in the day, the reason was farmers didn't say, the thing was, you know, farmers don't save anything. Everybody knows they don't save anything. They're going to spend it. And so it goes into, you know, to the parts store, who pays the employee, goes to the grocery store, who pays the employee, you know, and it turns over a lot of times. And I don't know if that number still holds true, and I don't even know where to get it. Somebody better than me with Claude would have to figure that out. But, you know, that's one of the things that as you push the local, you know, as we're pushing in local beef demand, you know, because that's like you're talking about on this grazing deals, the infrastructure required to get local beef is going to have to ramp up. It's going to have to change because, you know, you just look at
anybody starting a
restaurant and you go and you're like, okay, well, I want to serve ribeye steaks. We don't get X number of ribeye steaks out of a cow. Well, if they go in and you have 50 of them, that may be 3 cows worth. I don't know what it is, but it may be, let's call it 2 cows worth of ribeyes. But well, what do you do then with the brisket? You know, is that, you know, that restaurant that serves steak at the steakhouse is not necessarily going to get a brisket and smoke a brisket too and have, you know, and all of a sudden become a barbecue joint overnight. You know, that was one of the things that I had never thought about until I was watching Clarkson Farms and he started that pub. And his chef was telling him, here's your problem. Right. You know, you've got X number of cows. Well, this right here is going to, you know, this is enough meat for this many meals, which is like, you know, say 3 months or whatever. He said, but it's only enough hamburgers for 2. So, so you've got to have that whole process in there, and it's not just one thing that can do it. And that's why you wind up with people like Cisco that, you know,
right.
that can, that, you know, you go into a restaurant and
right.
have a popper in San Francisco and you can have the same popper in Charleston, South Carolina because mm-hmm. Cisco.
So, well, and which that says like there's a need for both of those. I mean, it's not like I think to say that we'd have to replace a long supply chain with a short supply chain is wrong.
Yeah.
We just need to, our long supply chain is solid.
Yeah.
We just need to invest in our short supply chain.
Yeah, because you really need them both.
You need both of them, and we don't have them.
And and I've heard this, so it's not an original thought. I very seldom have original thoughts, but they are, you know, it's a national security issue.
Oh,
you know,
yes,
food,
absolutely.
Food insecurity, you know, is why yes. you have problems in third world countries most of the time is because
yes.
they can't get food.
Crime
and it's because
follows
of this,
poverty.
And it just follows in through there.
Or if they do get food, it gets withheld by the people that mm-hmm. control the country to control the rest of the population.
That's mm-hmm. Exactly. And, you know, so it becomes a deal where, hey, you know, we've got to be able to go in the grocery store and get food or go into a farmer's market and get food.
Mm-hmm.
And for the longest time, I mean, this is not a new deal. For the longest time, public policy has been, we want to get as efficient so it can be as cheap as possible, which means big.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, invariably, that's what it means, and which means that you
consolidation.
Wind up with mm-hmm. up with massive consolidation. I mean, Cisco is they're the largest. There's only three food distribution companies that do the same thing, and it's I can't remember what the other two are. So I'm you mm-hmm. know. I'm not calling out Cisco. You know, if anybody
right.
out there that works for Cisco, I'm not calling you out. I'm just, that's just a name I can remember because I've said everybody's seen the truck. But they've gone in and been able to buy up all the local competition, all the regional distributors, and move into, they move in, you know, they can move into mm-hmm. an area, buy up four regional distributors, and suddenly they're there. You've seen the same, we've seen the same thing happen in the three tier alcoholic distribution.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And, you know, you wind up with Southern Glazers and
well, which I think we have laws, you know, that should prevent some of those monopolies from happening, you know, because I think at one time we understood the damage that they can
yeah.
do, you know.
We do. The problem is that they stop at an oligarchy.
Right.
You know, there's four meat packers that control 85% of the U.S. meat market. Four.
Yeah.
Well, that's not technically a monopoly.
It's not just the U.S., isn't it global?
I don't know if it's well. I just know that at least two of them are owned by global corporations.
Yeah.
But it's still four.
Right.
And then in the U.S.
Right.
it's like 85%. You know,
mm-hmm.
and they're like, well, you know, there's four, so that's not a monopoly. It accomplishes the same deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
So I think that's like goes back to this feeling that efficiency is the most important thing. Like, it has to be efficient. It has to make the most money. And you've brought this up before that, like, corporations are required by law to make the most money
they can.
That they can.
Thank you, court case in, I think it was Minnesota, back in the 50s, I think.
So it hasn't gone to the Supreme Court?
I don't know. That just mm-hmm. that was the court that said it because a shareholder, the guy that owned the business, wanted to give a bigger chunk of the profits to the employees,
mm-hmm.
and the shareholder sued and won and said that he had to the first step that he had to look out for was not mm-hmm. his employees. He had to look out. He had a fiduciary duty to the mm-hmm. shareholders to make as much money
well,
as
on
he possibly
the, on
could.
The antithesis of that, you have Elon's pay package was declared, you know, in Delaware
yep.
Corporation. They said, no, you can't have that pay package, even though every shareholder voted, and they voted overwhelmingly to give him the pay package. Well, then he moved to Texas, and he got his pay package.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it was a pay package full of incentives. Like, hey, if you get us to a $1 trillion company,
right,
we're going to, which in the ultimate scheme of things does make shareholder, you
yeah.
know, and right. He set, you know, the largest IPO ever until Anthropic will
drops
beat it.
Theirs, yeah.
When Anthropic drops theirs, they'll probably beat it. They're saying it could be $2 trillion
yeah.
company when it starts.
But yeah, I mean that's yeah, and it. I mean it's, you know,
wow.
It's the bigger a corporation gets, the tougher it is because I mean even as small as looking at a small farm, you know, every decision's got to be viewed through, you know. am I going to get a nickel if I spend this quarter? You know, wow. it's not a matter of am I going. It's so many decisions in the current marketplace mm-hmm. are how can I lose the least amount
yeah, that's,
of money?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. If yes. I do this, am I going to lose a nickel or am I going to lose a quarter?
Yeah.
Like, I mean,
yes.
that's the bad thing.
Well,
about
and that's
it.
The thing. And I think that, like, you know, understanding for all of us that, you know, that want to pay for more expensive groceries, but at the same time, I think to me it's worth, and also a lot of times these people that are at farmers markets, they can mm-hmm. take EBT cards. They can take your
yeah.
SNAP benefits, and which yep. is not
Ooh,
much.
I just saw that
people,
they made it illegal to use it. I didn't know you could use a EBT card at like Taco. What's the Taco Bell and KFC and Pizza
Fast
Hut?
Food.
You could. You can't now. I didn't know that you could.
Well, having had one of those before. I've had one of those cards during COVID.
Yeah.
Because Joseph went to, that was not something I could do. The only place that you could get something, so like we used to have single moms that have those.
Yeah.
They could get a frozen pizza from Papa John's, but you could absolutely
I wonder if it's, I wonder if it's.
Do that.
I think it varies by state.
I was going to say,
could
it controlled by the state?
It could vary by state.
Because I think Florida just changed their law where you couldn't buy vape products and lottery tickets with it.
What?
I'm like, that was a thing, but they just changed
oh
the law.
Oh, my gosh.
I
don't know. It's hard to know what the actual news is, but I think he's right that so the money goes to the state and then the state decides. Because, like, I have a friend now that has three kids, single mom, has like, some kind of pancreas, something or another, and has not been able to qualify for SNAP benefits.
Yeah.
She hasn't been able to work for, like, she was in the hospital. And she's just now, like, I mean, where she might possibly be able to get out and work.
Yeah.
But because she hasn't worked, she doesn't qualify for benefits. That's why she doesn't get benefits now. It's because she hasn't worked. Because there are work requirements for it.
Right, yeah. There,
you
unless
have
you
to work.
Can,
18, isn't it like 18 hours a week?
I think it's so many months out of the
I think
quarter
it,
or something
it,
or
it is
out of the year
it is hour it has to break out to something like yeah. 18 hours and I mean but there you know there's
but let, and also let, too, it, it's
what
not
makes
enough
it tough
to
is you know I'm like
hungry.
My knee-jerk reaction is you should buy you know healthy foods you should buy stuff you can buy stuff to make a meal for pretty stinking cheap you know and you can make that thing stretch but at the same time though you do have the single mom with three kids and like when am I going to cook I can't you know like me
right.
When we had the boys at home, I could cook. I could put something into four different containers, and in one Sunday afternoon, I had it all done. But I, you know, and
right.
you know, we
right.
could have meals planned out
right.
going through there. But you know, not everybody has the luxury of being able to go out and buy the stinking Tupperware that it goes
mm-hmm.
into. You know, then yep. when you know.
So if you want to know anything about food stamps, you can listen to our podcast from Brandon Lips, who was in the first Trump administration. That was his job. He was the
Okay, so what I was saying is a law was introduced to do that. To take
to what a federal law?
Yeah, where you cannot use SNAP cards at restaurants.
They couldn't even get a rotisserie chicken until like
so. It just says
more recently.
Yeah, it's state level. It's let's see. It says just that here's the people that currently qualify for restaurant meal programs, and on SNAP ages. Adults age 60 or older, individuals with qualifying disabilities, or individuals experience homelessness. That's the three that can qualify for restaurant meal programs right now. But
so
it ultimately
elderly,
does go back to the state.
They're elderly if they're disabled.
Or homeless.
Or homeless.
Yeah.
Then they're saying they might need to eat at a restaurant because they might could go get groceries, but they might not have the ability to cook them.
Yeah.
Because they're disabled, they're old, or
which, I mean,
homeless.
I mean, which yeah. makes sense.
It makes some sense.
I mean, you know, it's
let's just go back also to the fact that it's $7 a day. $7 a day a person. That's the max that you can get.
Yeah. Well.
Where are you going to eat for $7
a day? I don't know that that's.
You're going to go eat 2-3 times
I don't
and your
know
whole month's going to be gone.
Yeah. There was somebody that was on it that got her BMW taken away because she was on Instagram bragging about how she just bought a brand new BMW. And then she was like, and I got all this with my food stamp.
And so,
I mean, there's an amazing amount of, well, I mean, this person was actually arrested and was actually prosecuted. So we know that was real.
So but, you should listen to my podcast, because this is what I ask Brandon about fraud. And most of it is like organized crime.
Yep.
It's not the welfare queen. It's organized crime. It's organized crime, and a lot of it's international.
Yes. Russia is big in it, and the triads, I believe, are big in it.
I mean, why don't we just fix that problem? We do have like an FBI and all this. Why don't we just fix that problem?
Because some random judge from somewhere stops it. I mean, it's just, look, I mean, go way off the deal. Don't go to athletics. Like,
yeah.
LSU wants to have pro quarterbacks play on their team that has been on the roster this afternoon. Well, they got a local judge to do a temporary restraining order.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Lubbock got one for a basketball player the other day, which is great because I love him. I'm glad he's back. But, I mean, the way that these local judges can, like, do stuff is just beyond me. Well, they can stop stuff nationally.
That's the thing about it, is that the Supreme Court has pushed back on that, but it hasn't. Each one, you know, the Supreme Court can push back and say, listen, you know, you can't do this. Well, the judge can do that, and it's got to make it to the Supreme Court again before the, you know, the good judge gets slapped down. But, I mean, it's wild. I mean, there's for every way that there is someone trying to help someone and get them money in a way that will make their life better, there is four people trying to figure out how to steal that money.
Just look at COVID and the PPP program.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, they haven't even scratched the surface to that yet. If you go back and look at all our problems we're having now with inflation stuff, it started with all the COVID money.
Yep.
I mean, we all know people that got money that didn't need it.
Yeah.
That their businesses flourished during that time.
Yeah.
I've wondered that too, about like, what will the impact, you know, all of the Trump accounts that are coming out now. I've wondered if there will be impacts from
no,
that.
No, because it has to be locked up for...
I know, but I'm saying when it all comes out in 18 years.
Maybe, but that gives you... The thing about it is you'll have
the end of their career.
Let's say 18... let's say 18 years. You'll have 18 years where that'll be factored into the economy. Whereas with COVID, you didn't even have 18 months.
Yeah, they just dumped in a shorter period of time.
And that's the thing about it. Everybody... I mean, it is a commonly held belief by a large number of economists that, you know, government spending drives inflation. That's just the way it works, because you dump it in there and it's like free money.
Yeah, it's too many dollars chasing too few assets.
Yeah.
And that's the housing market.
Yeah.
I mean, that's why housing got so high, is that people kept the house they were in, went and bought a house in the mountains or whatever.
Yeah.
And, you know,
right.
But now it's starting to, you know, in areas, it's starting to come back a little bit. But I did see lumber actually has come way down in the last 6 months,
which is interesting. I mean, but there's a lot of lumber that has been grown in the U.S. for the housing market. And then the mills went away.
Yeah.
And they shut down the mills. They moved production to Canada or something like that.
Oh, that's off the table for right now.
But
Canada's not giving us nothing, and we're not giving them anything.
Well, which is,
I never seen such a ridiculous thing.
It is so stupid
in my life.
Hey, well, okay, I saw the reason that. Okay, but I don't know. I don't know what. Nobody knows the exact details, right? But the speculation amongst the, you know, talking heads in Canada, which. Their news is weird up there, because, you know, all their news is from the CBC, the Canadian Broadcasting Company, which is like getting your news from the BBC and them telling you,
or PBS,
hey, the government is good.
I don't know. I mean, I think they're all that way. They're all bought by somebody.
They're all bought by somebody, but this particular branch happens to be bought by their own government. But anyway, they're saying that the reason he did that is, you know, Alberta's October the 19th, I think, is voting to basically leave Canada.
Yeah, and I don't understand how... Are they not... So, they're under the crown, right? Like, they're an English...
No.
Well, I thought this dude... They're not...
They used to be, but they're the crown, I don't think, has any control over Canada any longer.
Okay. I thought... I don't know why I thought they did, because I thought they just, like, the crown appointed Carney, be the...
I don't know how their politics works, because it's a different system, and quite.
But frankly, can they keep states from
Like Alberta?
Apparently not, because
Alberta's right in the center.
Becoming independent. Well, but they have all those, they got all the oil.
Oh, yeah. It's a conservative.
Well, there's only two provinces, and I think there's two provinces in Canada, maybe three, that are, you know, because they have equalization payments that each, you know, every, so they, you know, so some people, some countries, some
states or provinces
give they ship them into Ottawa, and Ottawa sends it back.
That's well, like Robin Hood was out here with right. the oil,
but they have
and school
they
districts.
Have, they have equalization payments, and
we like, have an answer.
We do.
Alberta cannot legally leave Canada on its own, even if a majority of Albertans vote for independence. The legal framework comes mainly from their Supreme Court decision in 1998, which was referencing the secession of Quebec. And the Federal Clarity Act. The Supreme Court held that a province has no constitutional right to secede unilaterally. However, a sufficiently clear democratic vote for independence would create an obligation for the other participants in the Confederation to negotiate.
So the whole nation would have to vote in favor of them leaving.
Well, yes. But anyway, what I was going to do is Alberta, Saskatchewan, and I think those are the only two.
They'd have to amend the Constitution.
They are net negative on equalization payments.
They give more than they get.
They give more money than they get. And to the tune of, some of them, it's a pretty big dollar amount, Canadian dollar, but I mean, it's a dollar amount, pretty big dollar amount that they get in the other provinces. So, I mean, it's odd, but
well,
holy cat hair, it's 128.
128.
We've managed to ramp.
We didn't even do a commercial or nothing.
I know. We didn't even finish talking about NASA. By the way, we went to Oklahoma and Kansas, and it was great.
Okay, cool.
But we're also doing the Fly Lake thing, and we're doing several things. So it was great. If anybody wants to know any more about it, we're going to have some really great videos, follow-up videos.
Do we know who we're going to have on next week?
We have...
Todd coming back?
He is coming back, but I don't think it's till... the 18th.
Okay.
So the 11th is Catherine.
I'm going to be
sorry,
gone
I forgot
week,
her last name.
By the way,
she is the one that has been doing the research on soil health and produced water.
Oh.
Uh-huh.
I had to listen to that on the road.
It's going to be good. Yep. On the 11th. So next week. And next I think one? Todd's coming on the 18th. So.
Okay.
Then we've got. Well, I'm still efforting the fire guy. But every time I get close to getting him, he gets sent somewhere else to fight another fire. So
that's because we keep having too many fires.
Tell you what, we got a lot of brush to burn. I'm telling
yes.
you, which could open another can of worms. We could talk another half an hour on that. But anyway, we won't. So
we'll see y'all next week
on the Dry Side Dispatch.
On the Dry Side Dispatch,
brought to you by HSI Water.